Therefore, an analysis of psychology and whether or not evangelicals should adopt it must consider these complexities. It seems that the various common approaches to the issue at hand often do not take these complexities into account. Not only are the psychological issues related to our topic more complex than it might first appear, but also the same is true of the related theological issues. As noted above, frequently people give cliché-type responses to the issues that we will be examining. Let me offer another example. A typical position taken by evangelicals in seeking to make the psychological teaching of unconditional acceptance gel with Scripture is found in the phrase, "I accept you, but not your inappropriate behavior." However, an analysis of this cliché suggests that such an answer is not nearly as satisfying as it might first appear. This assertion, in effect, separates the individual from his behavior. It is important to examine whether doing so is practically and theologically tenable. We will examine such issues as we go along. The point here is that the various aspects related to the topic under discussion in this course are of greater complexity than they often appear at first. Yet another reason why this topic is complex is that it deals with the practical issues of life. It seems that when we deal with theory, it is easy to wrap concepts into neat packages. However, in grappling with real-life issues, we encounter the maze of variables that make up real life. We often find ourselves confronted with this complexity in counseling. The use of medication to deal with psychological problems might constitute such an issue in which the complexities of life seem to make simplistic answers inadequate. I mentioned this complexity at the outset in order to encourage you to be willing to rethink whatever position you might hold. My goal is not to change your position. Rather, it is to encourage you to be willing to go wherever the theological, scientific, and practical facts might lead you. Observations regarding the approach to be taken. Before we begin formally addressing the issue treated in this course, I would like to mention two items that relate to the approach that will be taken. The first has to do with our approach to fellow evangelicals in our presentation. I do not cite specific individuals with whom I disagree, but rather I seek to deal with their ideas. I do this for several reasons. First, our interest is in attacking or defending ideas, not people. It makes little difference what person you agree or disagree with when you conclude this course. What matters is the ideas that you hold, the position that you take. Another reason I decline to mention names is that doing so helps to promote objectivity. If I attacked your favorite evangelical counselor, this may promote a negative orientation to what I am saying, even if it is correct. Again, it is my goal to deal with the issues on the merit of the related realities, not the related personalities. Yet another reason for not specifying names is found in the biblical objective of harmony. The issue at hand is an emotional one, and many of God's people have taken firm positions related to this issue. The more our attack is against individuals instead of issues, the greater the discord that is sown among the family of God. Our goal is to deal with this controversial subject effectively, and yet in the process to ruffle as few feathers as possible. A last reason for eliminating names in my discussion is that it is not necessary to include them. The psychological concepts held by evangelicals are well known and widespread. If they were not, this course would not be necessary. Therefore, we do not need to cite sources to establish current trends in evangelical thinking on the matter. Most of the ideas cited can easily be found in a Christian bookstore or heard on Christian radio on any given day. The real issue of this course is not to establish what other people are saying, but to examine contemporary psychological concepts in the light of Scripture and scientific research in order to develop a perspective on psychology that is compatible with both. A second matter related to the approach taken in this course has to do with the implications of certain words that I use throughout the course. One of the major issues related to this study is the validity of what has been called the medical model. By this, I am referring to the position taken by some of viewing psychological problems as being similar to physical problems. Those taking this position would view depression as a disease over which the individual has no control, and therefore concerning which he should not be held responsible. As a result, they would assert that calling the individual to rise above the symptoms related to their depression would be both ineffective and cruel. Therefore, those holding this position view psychological problems as being morally of the same nature as medical ones. Thus, it's called the medical model. Regardless of whether one holds this position, we must recognize that, to some extent, the work of the counselor does parallel the work of the medical doctor. Both see people with problems with the objective of helping those people. Both seek to do their work by identifying the nature of the problem and providing a remedy. Because of these and other similarities, similar terms are used in relationship to both types of practices. For example, in seeking to determine the nature of the problem, both might use the word diagnosis and do so legitimately. In referring to the problem, the words disorder or even pathology might be used. Likewise, other terminology might seem to apply to both types of practices. Some evangelicals take the position that if a person utilizes such terms that have become identified with a medical field, they are endorsing the medical model, viewing psychological problems as diseases. In one sense, I would tend to agree with them. Certainly, the use of terms like disease that blatantly contain the medical message convey that sense, and unless a person has adopted the medical model, the use of such terms is unwise. On the other hand, I sense that many of the terms used by doctors can legitimately be utilized by a biblical counselor because they do not, in and of themselves, project the medical concept. For example, the word disorder, though a medical and psychological term, does not seem to me to convey the medical model per se. One dictionary definition of this term is, quote, an upset of normal function, end quote. If a person has adopted the practice of drunkenness or sexual promiscuity, this certainly is an upset of normal function. Furthermore, it does not seem to me that the use of the word disorder suggests that the person's problem constitutes a condition beyond the individual's control. It's just saying that his life is in disorder. Therefore, it seems to me that even a person who does not hold the medical model can legitimately use the word disorder. Perhaps a little greater risk is taken in the use of the word pathology because it is so closely tied with medicine. However, even here, I do not believe that this word suggests that the individual's problem is beyond his control. One definition of pathology refers to it as, quote, any abnormal variation from a sound or proper condition, close quote. Certainly, drunkenness and sexual promiscuity meet this description, and yet the term pathology does not indicate that the condition in view is not a moral issue. Another word on the blacklist of some evangelicals is diagnosis. Here again, I do not feel that the term itself suggests belief in the medical model, and therefore I view it as a legitimate term. As a result, I have chosen to use such words in this course. My reason for doing so is that I have found few good synonyms with which to replace them. Consequently, in an attempt to escape using the same words over and over, I have chosen to broaden my vocabulary by including these words that may be, unfortunately, offensive to some. I mention this here for the purpose of making the point that the presence of these words in this course is not an endorsement for the medical model and should not be taken as such. Where we go from here? The next lesson begins our formal treatment of the question of how evangelicals should view psychology, or to state the issue differently, whether psychology should be utilized by evangelicals in counseling. We will begin by describing what I believe to be the three most prevalent perspectives on the issue among evangelicals today. In the next lesson, I also introduce the position taken in this course on the issue. The rest of the course will be spent in developing and supporting that position. Again, I'm glad that you're taking this course, and I trust that it will be a blessing to you. This is the end of number one.